As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
This is Straight Outta Cobham, a show about Chelsea FC from The Athletic. On this episode, Chelsea's COVID crisis continues, goalless in the mist at Molineux, and we look ahead to the League Cup quarter-final, which may or may not happen this week. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic, this is Straight Outta Cobham. Go again then. The final double dose of Cobham of 2021 features me, Matt Davis-Adams, joined by two of my Chelsea chums, freshly thawed out from a chilly afternoon at Molineux. It's Dominic Fifield.
Good morning, Matt. How are you?
All right, thank you. Alongside Dom, the Chelsea Academy graduate who's top of the class when it comes to punditry, it's Sam Parkin.
Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Sam. Later, we'll look ahead to the League Cup quarter-final at Brentford. Listener, feel free to guffaw your way through that section if the game has been postponed by the time you hear this. First, though, producer Lucy, get ready with the bleep button because I'm about to say the C word. So, as we know, COVID-19 has been running wild through the Chelsea squad in the same way it has across Britain. In addition to the four positive tests before the Everton game, a further three players returned positive tests over the weekend. Chelsea asked the Premier League to postpone the Wolves game, a request which was turned down, much to the annoyance of Thomas Tuchel.
We were made to be in the bus, travel in the bus for 3 hours together. We are like in meetings together, in dinners, in lunch. Situation does not feel like it will stop if we keep on doing this. So we applied for not playing and give us some time to put the situation under control. Was rejected. It does not matter if we can understand it, because we cannot. It's very hard to understand for us. We are very concerned about the health of the players. We left Kai out against Everton. Also, he was negative. We sent Jorginho home, although he has also a negative test. We send him home to protect the health of the players. And now we end up with players who play just coming from COVID, being on the bench, being on the pitch after injuries. So, okay, we take this risk now.
Dom, you were covering this for The Athletic. You can understand Tuchel's anger at this situation.
Yeah, I can. I think it's slightly more complicated by the fact that the health and safety that he's talking about doesn't just relate to COVID-19 cases. Obviously, there are implications on the squad to have so many players ruled out with COVID-19. And I think at the moment we've had six definite positives, and I'm pretty sure Jorginho is a sort of, I don't know, it's they're unsure. He's returned both positive and negative tests by the sound of things. So they've taken him out as a precaution, as they did Kai Havertz ahead of the Everton game, which you'd argue is actually very responsible behaviour by the club. But obviously, when you've got a load of players that are coming back from long-term injuries and suddenly you're having to rely on them, I think that's what he's talking about. He cited N'Golo Kante had one training session ahead of the Wolves game, and Mateo Kovacic one training session after a lengthy hamstring injury, and then COVID-19 coming out of isolation ahead of Wolves. Chaloba's had two training sessions, and yet these are people that he's having to rely upon, or he says he's having to rely upon to make up the numbers and get to the requisite 14 players in the squad. Now, look, the counter argument to all that is he clearly doesn't trust people like Salma Niguez to start a game, and therefore he's having to start N'Golo Kanté despite only having one training session behind him. And that isn't down to illness or injury. That's down to Sal's struggles in adapting to English football since he came over in the summer. You might say the same for Malang Sarr, and Ross Bartley is fully fit, and you know, we've had our own assessment of his performances in the Chelsea first team, but he is a first team player available. You can also wonder why there weren't under 23s on the bench, and it's, I think, from the externally, people will look at it and have and wonder quite how much sympathy Chelsea deserve it when they loan out so many very, very good talented players to other clubs on season-long loans, and then this situation comes and suddenly their squad is stretched. But these are all things you cannot really predict, and the reality was that at Wolverhampton Wanderers, Chelsea had four outfield players on the bench, and three of those you'd probably argue aren't necessarily first team regulars or first team players that you'd want to pin your hopes on, let's say. And Mateo Kovacic was the fourth, and he's not fit. So a very, very difficult situation, and I can understand why he's frustrated. It's a very peculiar situation and very peculiar to our particular times, but it does seem a bit inconsistent as to which games get called off and which games don't.
The loan thing, they couldn't realistically have said we're going to keep Conor Gallagher and Billy Gilmour in case there's a COVID outbreak, could they?
No, but they brought in Sal Niguez on loan for the season, and that allowed them to loan out Billy Gilmour. And Billy Gilmour is a player that has done it in the past for Chelsea, albeit in fleeting appearances. Sal Niguez hasn't really shown very... Weirdly, he was actually pretty decent in the second half at Molineux, other than the one little incident with Raul Jimenez. But, you know, you're just making these decisions, and that is a decision that I don't think that's really paid off for Chelsea, for Sal, and probably for Billy Gilmour as well so far. But, yeah, it's just a judgment call, and I think that one probably went the wrong way.
Just on Saul, by the way, I tweeted yesterday that he was coming on at half-time. If you ever want to get some engagement, Dom, just tweet something about Saul. Some of the replies, that's enough for me. It's time to go. WTF. No, Matt, please don't say that. Optimism now gone. We definitely aren't serious. One mistake, but otherwise not bad from Saul. Time to take my antidepressant pills. Do Tuchel want me dead or alive? What the F? When does it end? To do what? Scapegoat. Hard to stay glass half full when I see those 11 words on my timeline. But as you say, actually thought we did all right. Sam, to bring it back to the COVID thing, if you were a player in the Chelsea squad who tested negative, would you have felt okay about getting on the coach to Wolves and back with the rest of your teammates?
No, I don't think so. I think when we're talking about the extent of the outbreak in the camp now, I think that would have made me feel a little bit uncomfortable, to be honest. I think when all the safety measures are in place, like they have been, you know, for large portions of the pandemic, I think it would have, you know, probably thinking back to my playing days, been a bit of a distraction, to be honest, and, you know, to get out there. But I think the speed that is moving at the moment, it's so unprecedented. It's changing every day. I think it would have been incredibly difficult for the decision makers at Chelsea to get the three coaches organised, to have the team meeting remotely, to train differently, just because this has all just happened so quickly over the last few days. So I do completely understand where Thomas Tuchel was coming from in you know, if you're looking at this game in isolation and looking at the last few days. So yeah, I probably wouldn't have wanted to go ahead, to be quite frank, but I think it's different when you're in the dressing room and you go out there for the game. And I think they gave a good account of themselves as they did in terms of the attitude against Everton. The second half yesterday was nothing wrong with it, and probably showed you, you know, just how good it is to have Kanté back in the side. I think for Saul in that second half in particular, he makes such a difference. But yeah, I mean, for me right now, there shouldn't have been any football at the weekend, I don't think, in the Premier League. And obviously it looks like we're going to see that in the week or two ahead.
We had a question from another Sam who asked about something you touched on, Dom. Do you know if there's a reason the bench was so bare? Is it because the first team and the under-21s have separate bubbles? We've kind of seen a mix, haven't we, with Premier League teams as to whether they introduce some of their academy players. Is that because Chelsea are looking out for their health? Is that because the academy side don't have a game until 2022 now? Or is there something else at play, do you think?
I suspect it's probably, again, down to the repercussions of COVID ravaging the calendar and the schedule. I think I'm right in saying that the 23s, they're due to play Manchester United towards the end of last week.
Friday night, yeah. Yeah, same with the 18s that went as well.
So they haven't trained since Thursday. That was what Chelsea were suggesting yesterday, that the 23s hadn't trained since Thursday and therefore for some reason wouldn't be ready to feature for the first team. But I think probably more of it's a logistical thing. It's getting them, I guess it's getting them tested at the same time and then getting them onto the squad. And it's also probably Tuchel looking at it and thinking, are we doing this for a logical reason? If there is a risk, if we are getting COVID cases on our coaches and around our dinner time, and realistically these kids, if they do come up, they're only really going to be bench fillers, as you say. They're just going to sit on the bench and they're not necessarily going to contribute on the pitch. Then why expose them to the time with the first team squad where, you know, Omicron might be going through that squad? I mean, I suspect it is just something as basic as that. And the fact that probably most of the Premier League ready players from the 23s are probably out on loan. The other ones remaining may not be quite. I mean, we have seen people like Harvey Vale in first team squads, haven't we, over the course of the season. There have been a few that have made appearances on the bench. But an away trip in the Black Country where the teams travelled up, presumably on the Saturday, I just think logistically it was awkward given that the games were cancelled. The United game, I think Southampton for the 18s, were cancelled very late on, and getting that all arranged and sorted out for the sake of just having another few bodies on the bench probably wasn't worth it.
Right, before we move on from COVID, Dom, The Athletic reporting on Sunday night that the Premier League are going to have a meeting later today after we record, discussing the prospect of postponing the round of fixtures set between the 28th and 30th of December. This is always the round that leaves me scratching my head thinking, why are they playing on this particular day anyway? But Jeff Bezos is going to have something to say about it by the looks of it.
Yeah, Amazon won't be happy. I mean, Amazon was still advertising this round of fixtures on Sky in the advert breaks on Sunday. This is sort of a key part of their strategy in terms of promoting Amazon Prime, tied in, no doubt, to festive shopping as well, I would have thought. So it's self-contained in that it's always one broadcaster that's doing this round of fixtures, and therefore it could be deposited somewhere else in the calendar if they can find a slot. I imagine there will be an element of resistance. And Amazon were told The Athletic last night that they, as far as they were concerned, that these fixtures are still progressing as going ahead as planned. It's going to be quite a fractious meeting, I think. I think Chelsea's tensions with the Premier League over the whole cancellation request will definitely be exposed yet again. The implications of that will rumble on. And they've got to try and come up with some kind of clear and obvious plan as to why a game, what's the stipulation for a game to be postponed? How many cases does it take for a game to be postponed? That's not easy because it relies on trust when it comes to lateral flow tests and trust in terms of, you know, players who are injured. And, you know, some clubs will, I'm sure there are clubs out there that are thinking, well, that should be quite an advantage if we did have that round of games postponed, because that would give us a chance to get some of these injured players back at some point in the latter stage of the season, where we might be stronger to take on those fixtures. But it's a difficult one to do, but they need some kind of clarity, because at the moment, what really is, I think, undermining the integrity of the competition is that no one knows what it takes to get a game postponed and why some games are taking place and others aren't.
Sam Amazon have got plenty of money. If they're football savvy, they probably realise that that round of fixtures usually features some of the worst quality games of the season. So you'd hope they could be talked into moving it. But if anything illustrates the fact that footballers play too much football, it's the fact that they can't find a space in the calendar to squeeze an extra round of games in. So it's not a surprise that this is going to be difficult because the season's so packed already.
No, it was always found it difficult to physically, I think, to play on that day. I think as well, mentally, once you've trained on Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, played on Boxing Day, that was a perfect opportunity, I always felt, to just switch off just for a few hours. And I tended to do so, but then you're back in training the following morning and then you're out there again on the 28th, which I did find incredible, really, because I think the human side of it as well, once you've looked after yourself and you've prepared for Boxing Day to give every supporter the opportunity to have that tradition, it would have been nice in my point of view to be able to have a couple of days to rest post Boxing Day. So I've never really understood it from that point of view. In terms of what's going on now, I don't know. Is this potentially just in line with maybe what's going to happen in the country with the government? Are they going to make a decision a little bit further down the line? So that gives everyone the opportunity to go to the football on Boxing Day, and then maybe we're going to see a change in the days following that. That's all I can think about, because the sensible thing at the moment would be to postpone Boxing Day, wouldn't it? And give everyone a little bit more time to get ready for that round.
Well, listener, there will come a day when we don't need to talk about the pandemic, but it won't be for a while yet. You'll be pleased to know we'll be discussing the much more palatable concept of a goalless draw in the West Midlands.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Wolves 0, Chelsea 0 on Sunday then. One for the purist, if the purist in question thinks goals are impure. The draw coupled with Manchester City's win at Newcastle means Chelsea are now 6 points behind Guardiola's guys in the title race, with Liverpool sandwiched between City and Chelsea. Dom, you and I were there. Some debate as to whether we were served roast beef or roast lamb, but no debate about the fact that it was a pretty tepid game of football.
Yeah, and it was eminently predictable, not least by Wolves having, as Tim Spears told us last week, they have gone binary of late, and they don't. There's not an awful lot of entertainment in their games, generally speaking. I thought Chelsea were, understandably, possibly given the makeshift nature of their team, rather flung together nature of the side, they were a bit off the pace first half, didn't look really with it, and Wolves were the more threatening team. But after the interval, I thought Chelsea responded well. They were far more aggressive. Thiago was imperious as ever, and N'Golo Kante is, I know we say it so often, but he's a complete freak of nature. For him to perform like that and to have run for 90 minutes non-stop and played as a number 10 who got back to fulfil duties of a number 6 at times after one training session following a knee injury and a month out was just phenomenal. The bloke is incredible. But, you know, it's hardly a surprise that Chelsea didn't score a goal. They haven't got a striker, and Christian Pulisic's toils in that number 9 role really summed up the lack of cutting edge, the one opportunity that Chelsea did carve out. You know, you're looking at Liverpool and Manchester City, and they stick that away because they've got natural goal scorers up top, and Christian Pulisic was denied by the goalkeeper. And with that went Chelsea's best opportunity and best chance of claiming the 3 points.
Yeah, Sam Pulisic's an interesting one, isn't it? We talk a lot about players having to take their chances when they're given the opportunity. It's been a real stop-start season for him. But you kind of feel sorry for him because he wasn't playing in his natural position. But at the same time, he didn't exactly show that he should be trusted going forward.
No, I've said a few times that I think Christian Pulisic's one of the players that struggles to find a role in this system. I'm not saying that Thomas Tuchel's going to do it, but if the problems continue to arise in terms of team selection, he may have to change the shape at some point. And that may see Christian Pulisic, for one, prosper in a slightly different role. You know, off the left-hand side, I think that would be his best position. Looking at yesterday's game, I don't know what Dom thinks, but would Mason Mount be a better option down the middle to play as an out-and-out false nine so Christian Pulisic can still run beyond from a wider position, get the ball, get turned and run into space? I don't know if his natural game, I've always said it about him playing in the pocket as a number 10, he's probably the least natural at coming towards the ball and taking the ball in comparison to Havertz, Ziyech, who we had yesterday, and obviously Mason Mount. So I'm not sure if this is the squad that he's got to select from moving forward, if we'll continue to see Pulisic in that role, or maybe he'll change it a la Guardiola with Phil Foden recently. I'm sure Mason Mount could do that. But yeah, I don't know. I think we're getting to that stage because the performances are in patches so limp that we may see him change the shape. I'm not saying that's going to be the answer moving forward, but if ever there was a time, it would probably be now.
Trevor Chalobah in central midfield, I thought that was quite a nice blend with him and Kante first half, Dom. But of course, this is the risk of bringing players back out of necessity. They might not be able to complete a game, and he went off at half time. We don't know yet how badly injured he was, but Chelsea don't need another midfielder out of action.
No, it seemed to be the injury that he picked up in that collision with Thiago Silva and Raul Jimenez about 35 minutes in. His right knee, he was complaining of pain. I think Tuchel implied that it was more of a knock than a twist post-match. So fingers crossed he's okay. He did okay. I think a lot of players, given that a lot of them were playing slightly out of position, I thought a lot of them did okay. It's not an easy place to go, Molineux, and it's they're a good team, Wolverhampton Wanderers. They've got over that little, you know, 0-1, I think it was 3 in a row right at the start of the season, where they're actually creating a load of chances but not putting them away, and they've reverted a bit to type, and they're an awkward side to play against. And you know, it's not really the type of team you want to be confronting when you're having to ask players to do things that they're not particularly familiar with, and that's what Chelsea had to do in the circumstances. And I thought they all did okay. And Trevor did, he did okay in midfield. In the first half, Chelsea actually had some nice little passing interchanges down the right flank involving James and Mount and Chalobah and Kante when he went over to that side as well. In the second half, actually, a lot of their more enterprising play came down the left, and the chance that was created was actually a very, very nicely weighted ball from Marcus Alonso inside for him to collect on the run. But you know, they are playing in patches. That's the bottom line. And while it is an admirable point, and in isolation you can't really complain about it, and indeed Thomas Tuchel wasn't. He was saying that he was actually really pleased with the second half performance. The reality is Manchester City are doing what Manchester City tend to do at this time of year, and they're steaming away with it on the quiet. 8 wins on the bounce, I think it is now. They're playing really poorly and hammering teams 4-0. I mean, it's got to the stage now where the gap is 6 points, and it feels as if Chelsea are clinging on to the title race. And yeah, you can argue that that's not necessarily all down to them, and they've been unfortunate with injuries and certainly with COVID, but the title pursuit is starting to feel a bit forlorn now.
Dom's just given us a nice preview of his post-match piece for The Athletic after the Wolves game at athletic.com/ChelseaPod, the place to go to read it in full. Sam, Chelsea not able to recall the players who are flourishing in the Premier League, not able to buy back as yet Tino Livramento or Mark Gerhey. It's easy to say it with hindsight, Dom touched upon it earlier, but do you think if they had their time again, they maybe wouldn't have been so willing to send these players out on loan or permanently?
Yeah, quite possibly. I don't think there was probably too many question marks about Conor Gallagher, given, you know, what he's done on his previous loan spells. Maybe Brozier's one that's taken people by surprise. I always felt that he missed quite a few opportunities, but I mean, that's looking a little bit foolish now because he's not getting loads of opportunities at Southampton, but he's been very clinical. I was at the game, saw Dom there, Crystal Palace, Southampton last week. He was excellent in terms of the goal he got, a lot of unselfish work. And Gallagher, despite not being his best night with the football around the opposition's goal, the amount of work he does without it. I know he made a goal for himself against Everton where he nicked it and scored late on. It's not by fluke that he's nicking all these balls in the final third. He almost comes on the blind side of players and toes it to a teammate. He's got an incredible knack of nicking the ball and getting attack started, transitions in dangerous spots on the pitch. So, of course, Chelsea could do with him right now. They're unbelievably so, because he's really excelling in all parts of his game. So, yeah, I think I said it, I think, on last week's pod, you know, if he's back next season, you know, relevant of what players they've got in that position, or maybe if they bring one more in, he has to be in that squad on merit, really, for what he's done in his short spell at Palace.
Quite pronounced, Dom, I think, if you look at the respective outputs this season of Conor Gallagher and Ruben Loftus-Cheek, I wonder if it might be Ruben's place in the squad that he takes next season.
I'm not sure that they're certainly not playing the same roles now, although Ruben's not doing anything at the moment. I mean, Ruben's been almost a sitting number six of late, and it will be, it's intriguing to wonder where Gallagher fits into a Tuchel team. This was when Simon was working on his pieces on Gallagher last week. He was asking where Gallagher is playing in the Palace team, and he's in a 4-3-3. He just fits that right-sided midfielder and in the midfield three, and that because he can provide all his dynamism and energy there. But Chelsea don't play that. So is he going to be a 10 in this Chelsea system, or will his return alone isn't going to spark Tuchel to change how the team's set up, because the team is set up at the moment for Thiago Silva and Jorginho to feature and to protect them, really. So, I mean, it's intriguing to see where he goes, because I don't think he is a 10. I think if he starts almost too far up the pitch, and a bit like the Lampard situation, when he was asked to play further up, he didn't necessarily always work, because he likes to time those runs. And that is something that Tuchel will ponder. I mean, he has been brilliant this season, Gallagher, but he's been brilliant because he's been perfect for what Palace want him to do. He is the dynamism for that midfield. He just fits their system. He's ideal for that. I mean, it's almost, if Palace tried to get him a year earlier under Roy Hodgson, and I don't think he would have had the same kind of impact in a 4-4-2 with Roy Hodgson. I think we wouldn't have been saying, you know, giving the same superlatives to Gallagher's performances. But he'll go back to Chelsea a much better player for the experience of. I mean, that's the quandary that going back to the original issue about whether people should be loaned out. They will inherit a much better player in the summer on the back of a season of being integral at Crystal Palace, and that will benefit Chelsea in the long run. Same with Broha. He was brilliant. I mean, completely blooming. He surprised me how good he was and how quick he was, actually. I didn't think he had that pace to him. Lovely finish for his goal as well. I mean, that's what these clubs are having to sort of weigh up. Do they accept that this isn't going to be, they're not going to have any use of this player for a season? You know, the recalls will get met because these guys have got the quality to play for these mid-table teams. Or do they hang them in reserve and almost not stunt their growth, but certainly delay it in terms of gathering of experience, because they won't be getting the same number of opportunities at Chelsea, even with the schedule that Chelsea enjoy. So it's a real dilemma, but come the summer, they'll have two very, very good players on their books again.
It's always fascinating, isn't it, to see how loans work out. You think if Conor Gallagher had gone to Leeds, which was apparently very close to being done, he wouldn't have been having the same season. He'd have been totally programmed into a Bielsa footballer, and who knows what would have happened to. Before we move on to Brentford, Sam, here's something that's just occurred to me. Chelsea looking for somebody to put the ball in the net. Need to be a kind of experienced international, but maybe all right sitting on the bench for a lot of the time. Ben Brereton-Diaz, cheeky £25 million bid in January. Get him in.
Oh, it's not a bad shout, Matt. I think he's going to go to a top division in Europe when the asking price gets met or whatever. Yeah, I mean he's on the radar of absolutely everyone, I would say, in Europe because of his performances with Chile, and I think he's 19 goals now for the season. He's just a player completely at the top of his game, playing with ridiculous confidence because of the stature that he's grown to because of his international recognition. So absolutely, you know, if you think back to that period when they were talking about Peter Crouch coming in, wasn't he, at the tail end of his career?
Yeah.
Ashley Barnes, I could go on. Yeah, I think he's got room to grow. You know, Matt, having seen him at Forest, where I think there was so loads of potential, but obviously just not that goal-scoring capability. Couldn't put it all together, you know. I think spent a lot of time playing in wide positions as well and probably doing too much hard work for the team. And now that he's focused on running towards the goal, as simple as that sounds, you can see the benefits. So, yeah, great athlete, incredible goal-scoring form. Wouldn't be the worst shout ever.
Yeah, imagine having him and then letting him go for less than £7 million. Anyway, as we record, Chelsea set to play their League Cup quarter-final this week. We'll take a quick look at that after this.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Brentford versus Chelsea in the Carabao Cup quarterfinal, scheduled to take place on Wednesday the 22nd of December. Brentford reported 13 positive COVID cases last week, meaning their game with Southampton was postponed. Oh, Dom, this has got to be postponed as well, hasn't it? I mean, everybody loves the Carabao Cup. Phil Foden so much he named his dog after the product in question. But if there's one thing that can be made way in the footballing schedule, it's got to be the second most important domestic cup competition.
Yes, I completely agree with everything you've said, including the Phil Foden bit. it'd be very surprising if this game went ahead. Likewise, the Aston Villa game on Boxing Day, given Villa have had their own outbreak as well. But what is remarkable is, as of yesterday, admittedly, everything is day-to-day at the moment, and Chelsea had started Sunday morning trying to get the Wolves game postponed, but they didn't know. They don't know whether Wednesday's game is happening or not. And yet players are due in back at Cobham today to start preparations for it. And they don't know whether this match is even going to happen. And it just, everything about the preparations for Wolves was about chaos. That was the theme of the piece I wrote, really, chaos. And no one knows what's going on. No one knows, A, whether games are going to be played, B, whether anyone's going to test positive, or I mean, just the shambles of everything at the moment. And it's not just football, it's society. None of us know what's going to happen from day to day at the moment. But it has infected, probably an inappropriate use of a word, but it has infected football as well. And this uncertainty is ludicrous. It's blatantly obvious that that game isn't going to take place. It shouldn't take place because Brentford haven't been able to fulfil their fixture at the weekend. So why isn't it off already?
Sam, do you think that there would be a case for Chelsea just saying, we're not going to play this game? You know, you get such a pittance in terms of money for winning the Carabao Cup, never mind winning the quarterfinals. It's not like they need the gate receipts from a couple of thousand away supporters. If Chelsea came out today on Monday and said, we cannot play this game, we won't play it, would that be the worst thing in the world? At least then supporters would know where they stand and they could start planning for either Boxing Day or whenever their next match is going to be.
I can't imagine they'll do that unless the situation gets too difficult over the next couple of days. If, you know, if they're completely stretched and there's not a decision made, then maybe they'd have to go to those levels. I think it's incredibly difficult for the players to focus. I think this morning, if they're going in there and, you know, the coaches are trying to act professional, go through the shape, you know, put them in the 11, maybe, you know, just... probably won't happen today because of the game yesterday, but tomorrow that would certainly be the case. Incredibly difficult to focus if in the back of your mind you think this game's not going to go ahead anyway. And I think it's difficult for the staff to put on serious sessions, to plan as if they're going to be out there on Wednesday. So yeah, I mean, you want to know as a player, that uncertainty just makes the professionalism slip in my experience in dressing rooms. If there's ever a doubt over a game, you know, it's hard for the players to focus. So you need the decision made quickly. And yeah, it is the least important, of course, of the competitions. I think there's, of course, bigger fish for Chelsea to fry. Even now, yeah, they've tailed off a little bit in the league, but the FA Cup to come, the Champions League, good draw in that, and still aspirations, of course, to go close in the title race. So it wouldn't be the worst thing if they didn't go all the way in this competition. But for now, decision just needs to be made.
Chelsea got beef with the Premier League at the moment, Dom. Obviously, this comes under the EFL's umbrella. Will they be in discussion with them? Or do you think there might even be some talks with Brentford about, hey, let's approach this together. And if we both go to the EFL and say we are both unable to fulfil this fixture, that might carry a bit more credence than it looking like sort of one club's trying to get out of it.
Yeah, that's a good point. But you'd imagine that Brentford... the issues are more pressing with Brentford. They've had 13 players out, and I don't know what stage of their 10-day isolations these are. This may be a moot point. That's why I'm querying why this game hasn't already been called off. I mean, if they're having to isolate for 10 days, having tested positive, then you know, there's got to be a good chance that they can't fulfil this game as it is, as it stands. But yeah, you'd imagine that there will be. Given the way that Thomas Frank has been speaking about COVID and his desire to have almost a circuit breaker in the season, that yes, I imagine that if Chelsea are looking for allies, then they'll probably find one with their West London rivals.
Well, if the game does go ahead, we will react to it in our Thursday show. If not, we'll probably just have another long chat about COVID. Elsewhere in Chelsea news. Not much happened. The women's team's game against West Ham, plus the under-23s date with Man United and the under-18s match against Brighton were all called off, meaning none of those sides will play again this year. Right, before we go, Dom, we mentioned your post-Wolves piece. Have you got anything else in the pipeline for Athletic subscribers this week?
I think the quiz that Simon and I have compiled is going live at some point this week. Looking back on 2021... I've got a couple of other pieces I'm working on, one of which relating to the opening of the transfer window. God, do you remember when we could just talk about things like football transfers?
Hashtag any Koundé update. It'd be lovely to get back to that, wouldn't it?
Oh, only a matter of days now. No, I typically, because I'm old, I've been given the retrospective piece. So why Chelsea sold the likes of De Bruyne, Salah and Declan Rice is apparently being flung my way. So that's going to occupy most of the Christmas week. Looking forward to that.
I just saw producer Lucy frantically scribbling down there. I'm guessing that she wrote, do athletic quiz, because in Thursday's pod, Lucy and I are going to be the participants in our weekly quiz. And so she's thinking that she can maybe get a head start there. And I've just absolutely kiboshed that, haven't I? Which in retrospect was not
Isn't good. It going to be brilliant though when all the listeners finally realise that Lucy's actually from Liverpool and speaks with a broad Scouse accent.
It's going to be fun, listener. Thursday show. It'll be our final one of the year, so we'll be doing all sorts of look backs and embarrassing me and Lucy with our lack of knowledge. Sam, you're heading off on your festive break now, right? So what? No more live football for you this year, probably. Probably not for any of us, to be fair.
Oh no, I think I'm penciled in for a couple of games in between Christmas and New Year that are going to be called off. So
lovely.
I'm in the same boat as everyone else.
All right, athletic.com/ChelseaPod, the place to go to sign up if you're not currently a subscriber. As I say, Thursday, our final show of the year. So do join us for that if you can. Until then, from Sam, Dom, Lucy and me, thanks for your company today. We'll speak on Thursday.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.